Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for Forecast is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This episode of Forecast is brought to you by Netflix. Watch thousands of TV episodes and movies on your PC, Mac, iPad, iPhone, or TV instantly. All stream directly to you, saving you time, money, and hassle. For your free 30-day trial, go to Netflix.com/TWiT.
What sort of future do you think we're heading for? How will we live as we slip into the 21st century?
Welcome to Forecast, episode 117. I'm Tom Merritt.
And I'm Scott Johnson.
And this is the show where we gather four folks together and take our perspectives on what's going to happen in the future of anything we want. Joining us today, Dave Veffer, producer of Trey's Variety Hour, right here on the TWiT Network. Hello, Dave.
Hello, Tom. Thanks for having me. Appreciate
thank it. You for joining us. And Chris Ziegler, senior editor at The Verge and host of The Verge Mobile Podcast. Welcome, Chris.
Hey, great to be here.
Great to have you along as well. We also have a prediction from one of our listeners. Dear Forecast, writes Bo, regarding last week's discussion on the optimal size of computing screens, we already have a prototype vision of the perfect computing device, the Omni Tool from Mass Effect. Once holographic display technology has been developed, it will be able to automatically change and optimize the size, ratio, resolution, etc. of your display screen, depending on your situation and workflow. Instead of touch, it will probably be controlled by advanced gesture or voice controls. All of this, and it can fit in a wristwatch or be embedded in your space armor. What do you think, Scott?
Sure. Why not? I'm a big fan of the Mass Effect universe. I'm a big fan of that holographic thing that comes off your arm, and that's how everyone sort of communicates, takes notes, tell the computer to do stuff, and all that sort of thing. And it's a cool, plot device. It's a cool way of sort of showing how that universe works and how things would function. Sadly, in that game, they never really do anything with it. They'll say, well, we need to readjust the coordinates of the thing. And the guy will lift up his arm and look at it for a second, then put it back as if that was all it took to do it. So there's a little bit of sort of context missing as to how that thing would actually function and work. But I am a big fan of some ideas and theories about being able to change the actual density of air particles so that they become tactile, even for a moment. And the idea that we could have holographic stuff being projected on our body or near us that we could then interact with and actually have some kind of tactile feedback. All of those things are great. It's just an issue of what is the context in which these would be used. I can't imagine us going shopping and pull up our arm and pay for our stuff and pull our arm back down. We're doing that now with devices like phones. So why not, you know, make it part of our sort of hollow presence? And I'm also all about carrying less crap in my pocket. So, you know, if this alleviates how much junk I carry around, then I say all the better, Tom.
Bo's, of course, referring to episode 114, so a few episodes ago. And, Chris, we were talking at the time about devices and mobile devices and how we would want to, or at least I would want to have one device, and I just put it in the confirmation of how I wanted to use it. So if I'm at a desktop, I just pop the device into a big screen and a keyboard. And what he's saying is, like, what if you didn't even need to have the thing to pop it into? It could just turn into whatever it was you wanted to use.
It's a beautiful dream, but I think that there are a variety of technologies that need to be invented for that to be even remotely plausible. But to go back to something that Scott said about paying for stuff with your wrist, that's actually here. The WIM 1, which is a small Android device, it's about the size of an iPod Nano, and it comes with a wristband. It's a developer kit, but you can wear it as a consumer wristwatch at this point. They actually have a Starbucks app for it. So it's just a 2D barcode that appears, and that's your Starbucks card. You hold it up to their little scanner when you get into the Starbucks, and you can pay for your drinks that way.
Yeah, so that's cool. That kind of stuff's happening now, and that's only going to get better and better. But, I mean, Tom, aren't we kind of reaching for a ubiquitous kind of – I mean, imagine a world, if you will, where we don't have electricity the way we have it now. That there's a lot of proprietary ways that you would have to tap into that electricity, even taking advantage of it. Now imagine today's world where I can walk into anybody's office and say, oh, my laptop's dying. Can I use your wall outlet? Yes. Boom. It's universal. It's the same connector unless you're in Europe. And even then you have an adapter. So you're plugging into this this big thing that just powers stuff. You don't have to think about it or ever worry about it. We'll get there one day with information acting like power. I really believe that. I believe that one day it will be so ubiquitous that that all the interfaces are universal. How we connect to, disconnect from, carry with us, attached to, whatever it is, all of that stuff's going to be things that, you know, any grandmother could do, and it would seem as easy as just plugging it in the wall. And you'll also have just as rare downtimes as we do with power outages, at least in most of the world, or at least most of the country. And that's, I think that's where we need to aim. And I have no doubt that we'll get there. I wish it was now, because that sounds awesome to me, but it's going to take a little time. And every company wants to control it, and every government wants to control it. So I don't know who ultimately end up controlling it. I hope it's privatized in a way that makes sense. But yeah, that's what I want. I want to walk into Tom's house without you knowing in the middle of the night. I want to be able to just plug my, you know, just get near your home. And I know that just by doing that, I've suddenly got my data flow that I need. That's what I want.
Yeah, I want wireless everything. I don't even want to have adapters. I'd like everything to just kind of, you know, wireless power, wireless data. Dave, what about you? I mean, what's your dream form factor for this stuff?
I wouldn't mind taking it one step further into the future and get some sort of neural implant that you just have to think it. You don't have to mess around with something on your arm or project a hologram. You just imagine it and, oh, I want to pay for this Pepsi. Thank you. You know, and it just happens. Comes out of whichever bank account. And
how do you share a screen in that case? Do you just think it at someone, I guess?
Yep. Yeah, you think, I'd like Tom to see my screen of my, you know, my thoughts on cars. Which car am I going to get today? And it's like some hover car, you know, in the future here.
Now we're talking something like Google Glasses, but implanted sort of.
Yeah, just in your brain, right in the brainstem. Why not?
That seems really cool.
Only hurt a little bit.
I don't want Google in my brain. I do want the convenience.
I think it's coming, though. I think you may be able to control it, but it'll still be in your brain, sure.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you, Bo, for the email. Definitely thought-provoking stuff. You folks can send us your emails as well. Send them to Forecast, F-O-U-R, Cast, C-A-S-T, at twit.tv. Or post them up on our blog, forecastpodcast.com. I want to take a quick break and thank our sponsor, Netflix, streaming thousands of TV episodes and movies directly to you, saving you time, money, and hassle. If you've got the internet, you've got Netflix. All you got to do is subscribe. You can watch Netflix movies on pretty much anything. They have it for the Wii. They have it for the PS3. They have it for the Xbox 360. It's on a lot of televisions as a smart app. It's on things like Google TV and Roku, and it's on the iPad and on Android, and it's almost everywhere. And it doesn't really matter how you watch it. You can watch it in big screen and high definition if you want. You can watch it on a small screen, and you can watch it for free by trying it out with our URL, netflix.com/twit. Be sure to use that URL when you sign up for the free trial, or if you're already a Netflix subscriber and you want to let somebody else try it out for free, pass them that URL. Works for anybody. Netflix.com/twit. We thank Netflix for their support of Forecast. And we hope you enjoy watching instantly with Netflix. Now to the predicting. And Chris, we'll start with you. Any kind of prediction, any kind of field, any kind of time frame. What do you got for us?
So I've been screaming this from the highest hilltops for a few months now. I believe very, very strongly that within a year, we'll say we will see an Amazon smartphone.
Oh, so wow. Now, if no Facebook phone rumors for you, you're going right to the Amazon phone.
That's right. You think about it. They've already built their framework. They put all this time and energy and all these resources into breaking free of Google's ecosystem. They own their own fork of Android now. They have their ecosystem through the Amazon App Store. They don't need Google's blessing to make devices. Why not take full advantage of it? Why make just tablets? They should be making smartphones too, and I think they have their sights set on that. It's just a question of when.
And they'd still be, I mean, they'd be beholden to the same, you know, they have to deal with the various networks, Verizon, AT&T, or whatever. You're not suggesting that Amazon will somehow figure out a way to break free from that and provide their own services. I mean, their 3G right now is being used by, or is being subbed through who? I don't even know who does that.
Well, but. Yeah, they've been working with both Sprint and AT&T for WhisperNet. And I'll say this, my brain isn't big enough to think how they could realistically break free of the traditional networks that have strongholds in this country. It's a very, very difficult thing to do. And even Steve Jobs was rumored to be trying to do that and ultimately failed and partnered up with Singular at the time. But if anybody can do it right now, it would be Amazon. When you look at their distribution network, their power, I'm not saying they're going to do that, but if anyone can, it would be them.
Google tried this with the Nexus and failed miserably, and they seem to be putting another toe in the water again with the new $399 HSPA Plus Nexus. It's not a GSM phone. But the difficulty seems to be getting being able to navigate all of the different networks, which is only going to get worse with LTE, and being able to avoid the carriers sort of working against you if you're not playing in their ballpark. I agree with you. Amazon's got tons of leverage here. What do they use? Do they say, look, if you want your phones listed on Amazon, you got to let us do this? How does that work?
Yeah, I think that they can leverage their distribution network somehow. But you're absolutely right regarding the different bands, the different networks. It's a huge problem, not just for LTE, but even for HSPA. Phones get thicker with each additional band that you add. And some of these smaller carriers that are dealing with 3 and 4 bands just for their own network, much less roaming, have these giant devices, and they're unable to get phones like the Galaxy Nexus that are sub-9 millimeter because they simply can't fit the antennas that they need in those devices. So I don't think that Amazon would be able to make a single device that would be able to cross all these networks. That would not be reasonable. I mean, technically they could do it, but they make such an ugly phone that nobody would want it.
It'd be the size of the Kindle Fire, but it would just be a phone.
That's right.
Yeah.
In fact, it's Kindle Fire. That's
that's the big joke. It's really interesting because, I mean, this opens up all kinds of new questions that are already being asked of Amazon, which is, do you already have too many channels, too many retail channels, too many connections through too many different products, too many industries that are some, quite frankly, are suffering as a result of. So you look at the publishing industry, I guess you could in some way look at them and say, well, they've definitely taken a hit from digital, and they've taken a hit from Amazon specifically. But also bookstores have been taking hits from Amazon for years and years and years. So what we're asking Amazon to do now is to open up into a new space, or a relatively new space, with phones, and make a play to dominate that space. And at the same time, continue to sell handsets from Apple and from, you know, HTC and from everybody else, Motorola or whoever, that are on competing networks, that are on competing plans, competing manufacturers, yet still kind of control that big, fat retail consumer channel on the internet that they right now have a really, really heavy hand in. How do you see that shaking out? Because to me, that's the part that gets a little bit screwy. They already, in my opinion, and I'm not saying they should or shouldn't, but they get away with way more cross channels and bumping up industries than companies who used to be accused of this in the brick and mortar days before online was even a thing, before Amazon could even claim this. So how are they going to do even more of that without getting in trouble either legally or, you know, I don't know what else would happen, some other sort of backlash. It seems like a lot they would control.
Right. Well, I think that Google has definitely tried this. They've tried very, very hard to play both sides, as you pointed out. And they continue to try to do that. They advertise, if you go to, I think it's google.com/phone. I can't remember the URL. They list all Android devices, the ones that they've blessed, the ones that run Google Play, not just the Nexus series devices. I don't see any reason why Amazon wouldn't do the same thing. They just look at, or they would look at their own phone as just another vector to get their content that they're selling out there onto the streets. And I think, frankly, they're emboldened by the success of the Kindle, both on the e-reader side and also in, 7-8 months now, they've completely dominated the Android tablet space with their own custom-cooked version of Android. I think, yes, there's the page. And I think that they would want to take that success elsewhere.
Dave, do you think? Do you want to buy an Amazon phone?
No, because... All right, so the main reason the Kindle Fire, I believe, is successful is the price point, right? So if they're going to try and compete, if they're going to try and compete with other existing phones that have a foothold already with a Google Play Store, which I think is actually a little bit better than the Android market, is you're going to have to be what, $100, $80 to really convince people to switch over from their existing favorite Android blend of flavor?
Well, you have to remember that people, I know that I personally, maybe this isn't true for everybody, maybe I'm more of a shopper than most folks, but I visit Amazon.com pretty much daily to check out what their gold box specials are. And you know how when you log into Amazon.com, the first thing you see probably once a week or once every other week is this giant front page promo, quite often written by Jeff himself, saying, hey, here's what we've done. We've either added these these videos to Amazon Prime, or we have these new e-readers you should check out, or we have the Fire that you should check out. So I think that that alone, I don't know what kind of traffic Amazon.com's front page gets, but it has to be absolutely immense. That alone is going to attract a lot of attention. They can, if anyone can sell a very, very attractive device cheaply, a homegrown device cheaply, it's going to be them. And I think that the Fire is a perfect example of that. I don't know why they can't parlay that business model, that hardware strategy, into a phone.
Yeah, see, I actually think you're totally right. It just, it really makes me think long and hard about Amazon and what they are today and what they will become, because they are a freaking beast. And I'm not crying foul, I'm not crying monopoly. I'm just saying that even me as a user, when I need to buy something, no matter what that thing is, and it's not just books anymore and it's not just electronics, it's everything that I need to look for, I can get it there. And they have completely dominated my online shopping. And I have a notion that that's true for the most part for most other people. So the fact that they would jump into a new business like that, and if they succeed with that, like they have with the Fire, because the Fire is a success, then what's to stop them from a million other industries? And I feel like we're going to get into a space where their dominance is going to be so strong, we're going to see a lot less come of other innovators, other existing or other up-and-comers are going to be able to even come close to competing with this sort of thing. So I don't know. I'm kind of torn. I feel like on one hand, I'm a bleeding heart screaming heat tree hugger about this. On the other hand, I think it's kind of awesome that they've done what they've done. And the reason they've done so well is because they really give you what you want. So I don't know. I don't know where I land on it, but it gives me a little pause to think that they would have that many feet and so many, I was going to say cookie jars. Let's change it to hands.
Why are they standing on the cookie jars, Scott?
They're going to have that many hands and that many cookie jars, and something's got to give at some point. Somebody's going to flip out. There's going to be antitrust. I don't know where it comes from or who makes that happen, but I just feel like it's this bubble that will burst at some point for Amazon.
Right. Well, they could very well just get squashed when they try this, because if you look back over the past 5 years in the wireless industry, so many players that Apple notably accepted, but so many players have tried to either invent or reinvent the cell phone or the cell phone business model and just completely failed. They've fallen flat on their faces. Even Google, like we were talking about before with the Nexus program, ultimately decided against their original intention, which was to sell these devices directly unlocked. So, yeah, I mean, even if they try this, that's certainly no guarantee of success. But I just think that with Amazon's reach, they probably have a better chance than most players out there.
I have the same feeling about an Amazon phone that I had about an Apple phone in 2006, and I was dead wrong. But my thoughts then were, it doesn't make sense for Apple to make a phone, and they already tried partnering with somebody on the Motorola Rocker, and it was a horrible failure, and so I just don't see it happening. And I feel that way in different ways about Amazon, which is, gosh, they'd have to partner with somebody. And, you know, the people like Google who've tried similar sorts of things have failed, and I just don't see it happening. So I think I'm probably dead wrong, because I have that same feeling. And it does make sense. The one thing that the Kindle has that Apple didn't have at the time is that ecosystem. It already had, like you said, Chris, it has everything except the ability to make a phone call. It even has that if you hack it. So, you know, why not take what you've learned, what you've developed, and what you've made and turn it into a phone? Any reason why not, Dave, Scott?
Well, I mean, yeah. I mean, well, no, you make a good point, Tom. An ecosystem is everything. It's the reason iOS is strong and continues to be strong. And it's, you know, I've always said the Windows Phone, I think Mango and Windows Phone's interface and the whole Metro idea is a pretty cool one, especially on a phone device. And every time I have one in my hand, I'm like, man, this is kind of awesome. But then I go, where's all the stuff I can run on it? And that's when I realized there really isn't a lot. There's stuff, there's things, but there's nothing
like... More all
the
time, too.
Right, more all the time, that's true. But there's more all the time on Android and more all the time on iOS. So, again, we're dealing with this, well, where am I going to get the best, you know, app experience right now? And the chances are you're going to get it with Android or iOS, and you're not going to get it with the Windows Phone. But they do come to the table with a whole lot more content. They've got video crap ready to go, and they're adding to that all the time. Prime as a service. But again, see, that Prime service would probably just be, again, this blanket thing like it is for Fire users now. It's like, well, we started it as a way for you to get cheaper shipping, and now it's this thing to get you access to all these tons of videos, and now it's going to give you all this music, and now it's going to give you these 50 other things. And they're just covering it all. Like, it just feels so not, the word isn't monopolistic. I don't know what it is, but it's starting to feel like
tentacles.
This weird 90s internet startup that we all laughed at the name at back in 1995.
Dave
has just become this thing, man. Yeah.
To answer your price objection, what if Amazon gives you the phone for free?
Yeah, then that's a huge thing. You know, they've got the marketplace already set. They've got the apps. They've got Prime. If they do it right, they could be pretty successful. I don't think I would personally get it, but I think for a lot of people, it would be a great solution.
All right. Anything else, Chris, to add before we move on to Dave's prediction?
I actually think there's a possibility, a very small one, but a possibility we're going to see this in time for the holidays this year. I don't know. I have no information to back
this isn't based
up.
On a no leak tips. Or people familiar no. with the matter or anything like that.
It is
right?
not.
Yeah,
there are no people familiar with the matter in this case, including myself, unfortunately. I just have this weird hunch that this could happen.
Gotcha. Cool. I hope it does. I think that would be really interesting. I think more competition is always better as far as I'm concerned. Dave, let's move over to you. Your prediction, anywhere, anytime, any place. What do you got?
I'm going to go about a century into the future. I'm thinking medical here. Okay. I'm going to go with, you'll be able to go and get an injection that's going to genetically alter and improve all your organs. Okay. Whoa. So you'll have a better heart, healthier brain. Your spleen and liver are going to filter out carcinogens and cholesterol. Your bone marrow is going to create like some sort of super blood solution that has all the known antibodies. And if there's like a new disease out there, you just get a booster injection that's updated for the new diseases and could like double our lifespans, maybe give a better IQ, better vision, reduce mental disorders, great metabolism, take this a supplement every day to keep it going. I think that'd be cool.
Now, this is an epic prediction. We do get those that are like, oh, we're going to be able to get custom-made organs or artificial organs, or we're going to be able to grow our own organs at home. And it's always this organ-by-organ kind of approach. You come in here with a shotgun prediction that says one injection solves all of our internal problems. That's pretty awesome, pretty ingenious. What leads you to think that this is all going to be true?
Well, I think a combination of just nanotechnology. Maybe we'll get some quantum computing that can figure out all the calculations to properly modify all the genetic code to fix all your organs. That's what I'm thinking.
So it's a ways off.
Yes,
we got to
at least 100 years.
We've got to solve either the quantum computing problem or some kinds of huge leap ahead in computing power, and then we've got to be able to understand genetics and how that works even better. And then we just develop a formula that goes through and says, oh, we'll look for particular problems. Will it see? What I'm wondering is, how does it work for everyone? Because everybody's organs are a little different. And maybe optimal functioning for one person is actually, you know, negative functioning for somebody else.
Well, I suppose you could just take a blood sample and it's going to analyze your DNA sequence, and then it'll, you know, spit out a formula just for that person.
I
love it.
And the recipe is tailored individually to each person. Because I don't want to get, you know, Keith Richards' liver enzyme injection by accident.
Well, he might be the key for the ultimate liver.
Right, actually. Yeah. Maybe I do.
Let's get Keith Richards' liver. We got to find out what's going on there and use that.
Yeah, there's some kind of weird mutation going on there. I love this prediction. I like the idea that that you're going to get everything. You know, I mean, we all want blanket solutions to our problems.
Everything?
I want everything, Tom. I want this weird itch to go away. I want that thing my toenail does to quit doing that. Like, I want it to just go through, do a complete system check, and get the big stuff, heart and lungs and liver, but then spread out some and say, well, why is that? We don't need that mole. That mole should be removed, and because it looks like it's going to one day change or whatever. Like, that is the reach of this idea, if we were able to ever nail it.
Chris, what do you think? Would you take the injection that alters and improves all of your internal organs?
Oh, absolutely. Sign me up. Just, you know, if my insurance covers it, all the better. But, you know, I feel like the gap between humans and computers closes every single year with artificial intelligence and the amazing things they're doing in robotics now. And it only stands to reason when you think, you know, you mentioned a complete system check. If you can do a complete system check with a computer today, why wouldn't you be able to do a complete system check on the human body in 100 years or in 200 years and to fix the problems that come up? You know, you can buy antivirus now and just fix everything. Why wouldn't you be able to do that on the human body? And, you know, when I was growing up, it was complete science fiction to think that we would be able to map the human genome. And look, now it's like, you know, they've mapped hundreds or thousands of human genomes now, and within a few years, everybody's going to be able to do it. So I don't see why this is unreasonable at all.
Yeah, I think so, too. It brings up an interesting question that we had on Tech News Today in regard to someone who was saying that they didn't want to have an ocular implant, and they were slowly going blind. And they said, yeah, I mean, the resolution of an ocular implant is going to get better all the time, and that's going to help. He's like, but machines break down. And he preferred to have some sort of organic treatment. And there's progress being made in those ways as well to actually fix the problem. Now, David, sounds like what you're talking about is what he wants, which is, you know, just a way to actually fix the problem. But what do you think? If we get to the point where we can have the computing power to be able to create this altered organ injection, we may also have the power to build more durable and powerful electronic parts, machine parts, to replace the organs that would be better than any conceivable organic alternative.
Well, yeah, I mean, you could, in theory, have, you know, we're going to be, like you were saying before, Scott was saying, grow our own organs. So you could grow them around a particular nanotechnology built into it, so it gives you bionic vision at the same time while you're having an organic organ.
I'm thinking cyborg.
Yeah.
Right. You're thinking a combination. But see, I'm siding with the idea that we get better and better at the organic. They still are machines. They're still constructs. They're still synthetic. You know, we get to the point that we're building the kinds of synthetic humans we see in movies like Alien, where we just have some weird, you know, white stuff pumping through us, and that's all we are, and our organs are, but we're still sort of these organic based things. I always thought that was interesting in those movies. It's like, well, here's an artificial person, and what you, the audience, is used to are moving parts and cranks and levers and stuff, you know, gears and things, and that's not what this is. This is fake bone, but bone made to be like real bone, and may even degrade like real bone. We're going to have, you know, fluids that pump through the body like blood, but not just like blood, but kind of like blood, maybe a little better than blood, but nature got it pretty good, right? So why not mimic nature more? Take that.
You know what? Ken from Chicago just kind of threw me here too. He says, at nanoscale, the difference between nanobots and organic cells is quite blurry indeed. So we may end up with both, and the difference, you know, be negligible. The difference would be academic at that point. And then we get to the whole, like, well, if you take your brain pattern and transfer it into a robot, is it still you? And all, you know, clones, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But now we've drifted far away from the idea of, look, I just want to take the body I have now and improve it. Do you worry, Dave, that we would take the body we have now and change it so much that we would change who we are? I mean, what if the injection not only, like, cures my liver and my itch and the big toe and all of that, but also, you know, makes me more attractive, makes me smarter, makes me better at math, and all of a sudden I'm not who I am anymore? Does that bother you?
Well, you'd still be at your core yourself, just an improved version of yourself, right? You'd be smarter, faster, friendlier, happier, because you're not, you know, you don't have some sort of mental disorder maybe that it fixes, or all kinds of cool stuff.
Yeah, but it's the idea that it has to be purely, I keep going back to the synthetic versus, you know, organic or, you know, actual biomaterial. I don't see any reason why nanobots... I mean, what are nanobots at the end of the day? If we get sophisticated enough with them, they're just as viable, or just as, I don't know what the word is, just as, what's the difference? Maybe that's the word I'm looking for. Is legitimate. They're just as good. They're made from, you know, from dust we come and from dust we'll go. Everything sort of is coming from what's available to us here, unless we go out to the stars and find some even cooler elements to work with. But for now, this is what we have to work with. And if those things come from that, I just don't see a problem where it's mixed. And I don't see it as so much cyborg with one big metal eye and one normal eye. I see two very normal eyes, one that may have a bunch of, you know, nanobots swimming around in it to sort of maintain the fluid or to maintain pressure or whatever the thing, you know, whatever problem I may have, or keep that retina from tearing, whatever it may be. That's cool. I don't see that as a big... metal Band-Aid on top of organic material. If we get good enough at it, what's the difference? It's all organic material in the, you know, in the end.
So around the horn, Chris, I'll start with you. Would you rather be upgraded entirely organically, cyborg, or brain transplanted into a robot?
Yeah, I think, well, related to your brain transplanted into a robot thing, I think that the ultimate solution is to upload your brain to a complete robot without any organic material whatsoever, because then it can just be maintained indefinitely, and you could probably just maintain yourself. And the scary thing is that I don't think that that vision is too far off. I think we're measuring that in centuries, not millennia.
Yeah, no, you may be right. I mean, well, the singularity is near, folks. Definitely think you're overestimating. That's going to be faster than that. But yeah, but yeah, it's there's a question of whether it's possible to actually reduce the complexity of brain patterns to a transferable algorithm. That's kind of the only major obstacle I've seen. But if they can solve that, all of the other pieces are at least theoretically possible. Scott, right. What about you? Cyborg, organic, or brain upload?
Oh, man. This is going to sound contrary to what I've been saying the last 10 minutes, but I think cyborg, because I want to try that out. I want an extra strong arm and a normal arm, like one normal arm and then one big, beefy, lifting stuff arm.
You want to have your cake and eat it too.
Yeah, kind of. I want that trend, because I feel like that'll be transition period. That'll be the stuff we do until we get better with meshing our synthetics and our organics. So before that, there's going to be this period of just sort of hacked on kind of Mad Max period for implants and such. And I kind of want to be there for that, despite the fact that it sounds kind of painful and horrible. But I want to be able to see, you know, I want people to know that my eye, the one that has the red dot in the middle of it, is the one that's like zooming way out and doing all the math about the thing 300 feet away from me while I'm checking that out or something. You know, I want it to be a more visible, visceral sci-fi kind of experience before we get to the other stuff. Because I think ultimately we're getting to the other stuff, but I would look forward to that middle ground there.
I'm kind of with you. I kind of, you know, I like the idea of the cyborg, you know, best of both worlds approach, but I think that ends up, you know, the logical conclusion is you end up just becoming entirely machine, possibly. So I'm going to go with Chris and say, you know, upload me into the robot. What about you, Dave? I mean, you seem to have the preference for the organic, but do you really? I mean, are we misreading?
Well, no, I mean, I'm happy with either the organic or the cyborg version. The cyborg version is probably a little bit cooler because you can get that, you know, the vision thing, like you can stare out 300 feet or whatever with the red dot. I like that. But I think the problem with uploading yourself to a computer or the net or anything is it's a copy of yourself. So it may have all the same thoughts you did, but you, if you die, you're still dead. Like, your copy is going to live on without you, but that's still not you. You're not going to experience that. Your copy is going to experience all that stuff.
It's a good point. And the only counter to that point is to turn this into philosophy class and say, well, aren't we all copies of our earlier selves? Blah, 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 blah. I think it's best that we don't go down that rabbit hole quite yet. And instead, Scott Johnson, maybe we should, I don't know. Questions? You got four of them, maybe?
Well, you want to go down that road? I see where you're going. Hint taken, Tom. Wink, wink. Hey, guys, it's four questions time. It's where we ask four rapid-style fire questions. What? Rapid-style fire? Anyway, questions. We ask each of our guests these real fast. That means they don't have a lot of time to answer. They must answer from the gut. The first things that come to their minds, I'm going to ask my questions of our good friend, Chris. Chris, are you ready for your questions?
I am. Let's do this.
Here we go. How many more presidents will we elect in the U.S. before we accept the idea of a single world leader?
So we're assuming that we're accepting a single world leader.
Well, your answer could be infinite. You know, we'll never. Yeah, I guess.
I would say 8 to 10.
Wow.
All right. Wow. That's lower than I thought, but very interesting. Man, they're going to have to pry that from our cold, dead hands, aren't they? It's going to be interesting. Yes. All right. Next up. When we dig to the core of the earth, what or who do we find there?
Well, really weird people who haven't fully evolved, obviously, or who have evolved completely differently than ourselves. What was that world called where all the Matrix people went?
Zion.
Yes. Is that it? That's what we're going to find.
We'll find Lawrence Fishburne is the answer.
Yeah. And Mole Men, obviously.
And Mole Men. Yeah. And Chud. Don't forget Chud.
And Chud. Right.
Let's look for this next question, which is, if you could play one TV commercial in front of an alien invader, which one would you choose to play?
Oh, that's an easy one. The one of the recent Terry Crews commercials for Old Spice.
Yep. Good call.
Oh, humanity screwed. All right. And then finally, your last question, which would you rather communicate through in the future? Your mind? This is very similar to a question we asked earlier. Your mind, your implants, or your forehead-mounted display screen, or advanced body language techniques?
I didn't expect the forehead-mounted display screen, because I have a nice big forehead. I could do like a 720p or 1080p maybe. That would work out pretty well. But I'd still have to go mind, I think, just for the sake of convenience. And yeah. So you don't look silly.
I also, part of the reason I came up with that question, I thought it would be fun if you could only play multiplayer games with people. They had to be there because their forehead was your screen and yours was theirs. Like it. And it was the only way you could play with your buddy as if he was standing right next to you. I think that would be kind of fun. Congratulations, Chris. You have successfully answered four questions. Tom, over to you.
All right. Thank you, Dave. Are you sitting comfortably?
Yeah, I think I am. I'm a recliner here. My easy lazy boy.
Okay. Good. Then we'll begin. Question number one. Will we only mine the moon, or will we someday have farms and cows and stuff?
No cows, no farms, just mine it.
Just mine, strip mine, poor moon.
Yeah.
Will there be, and follow
we
on.
Don't care
on
the, about the cows enough.
Will
we?
There be an ecological save the moon movement then?
No.
There is like, yeah, mine it. We don't care. Question number two. What will become of postcards and the impulses to send them in the future?
I think we're just going to be, sending our little e-greeting cards from Blue Mountain that have an animation and... Are we already doing that now?
It's a world of flash animation and animated GIFs.
They're going to get even more animated, more flashing, and it'll be fantastic.
Question number three, will we someday be able to record everything all the time?
Yes. We're already there almost.
Like 360 degrees.
Oh, I thought you meant like TV. Okay. Yeah. yeah, why not? I put a little... You know, you can just have a little camera that's mounted to the top of your head and it shoots up to like a 360 kind of mirror and it just can capture the whole thing. All right. I think you could probably do that with today's technology.
Gotcha.
like a Google car walking around.
Everybody's like a, and capturing your Wi-Fi packets.
That wouldn't look stupid at all.
No, not at all. Question number four. Will you submit, work with, or revolt against our eventual robot overlords?
I welcome them. I submit.
You'll submit. You welcome robot overlords. You know, it's smart. It may not be brave, but it's smart.
Yeah, maybe I'll get the good seat at the table.
That's right. Yeah. Maybe they'll be beneficent.
Yeah, I can be like the, Joey Pants on the Matrix, right?
Yeah, exactly.
All you want is good steak.
That's all I cared about. All right. Well, thank you, Dave. Those are great answers. Thank you very much for playing four questions.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
And that's it for the show. Thank you both for being with us. We enjoyed having you and sharing your visions of the future. Chris Ziegler, of course, at The Verge, theverge.com. Let folks know what you got going on over there, what kind of stories they can expect when they seek you out.
Everything. It is a cornucopia of the greatest in technology. I encourage every single one of your viewers to check us out.
It's a panoply.
I've never heard that word, but yes.
But yes, of course. And Dave, producer of Trey's Variety Hour, and we can find you at plusdave.com. What do you got going over at Plus Dave?
Plus Dave just brings you to my Google Plus profile page.
And is that where we would also find Trey's Variety Hour when it's not streaming on Twit?
No, you would find it on Trey's profile, but it's always streaming on Twit.
That's right. Well, yes. Except for right now. But
well, yeah, you can always find us on twit.tv/tbh, and we're on Mondays at 7 p.m. Pacific.
Excellent. Thank you, Dave. Scott Johnson, anything you want to let the folks know about with the Nerdtacular tickets on sale now?
Yeah, they went up today. Went up today at noon our time, Mountain Time. So if you are interested in coming to the Nerdtacular event, we do it every year in Salt Lake City. Tom is coming. He's come for the last 3 years and is always a hoot to have there. Many other Frog Pants producers, if you're into any of the shows we do or any of the community stuff we're into, it is a chance to hobnob with your people and meet a bunch of producers, shake hands, have stuff signed, hang out, get tons of prizes and swag. It's a great time, a great weekend. We're even renting, this is a big throwback to a couple years ago, the next morning, we're renting out an entire movie theater once again just to relive the old days and watch Brave from Pixar, which will cost people nothing. So we're looking forward to all of that. If you want to get tickets or details, go to nerdtacular.com, and all this stuff is there. First News Post is all about the tickets, so you can grab those now while they're hot.
And thank you, folks, for watching or listening. Of course, as I mentioned, you can email us. Our email address is forecast@twit.tv. You can subscribe to the show at twit.tv/FC or check us out on our blog, forecastpodcast.com. Thanks, everybody, for watching. We'll see you next time.
Only 32 years away.
Way.
So, Chris, how are you feeling about Paul's no internet experiment? We were just talking about Russ Pitts on Tech News Today about it.
Yeah, you know, I'll speak to Paul in a year. That's about all I can say.
That's because, what Russ said too, actually.
I don't know how to use snail mail. I lost that skill about 10 years ago.
That's funny.
So God bless him. You know, I think it's a great experiment. I think it's going to be very cool for him. I just don't know how I'm going to get in touch.
Well, I'm interested to see his, you know, his findings, his observations as it goes along, for sure.
Right, right. Yeah, it's going to be, the concept is so foreign to me. I don't even know how I'd go a week, much less a year.
It's like, I compared it to people who say, well, I'm going to try living without electricity because I want to see that what that's like. I mean, for people like us who do this and rely on the internet so much, it's kind of the same drastic jump.
Right. That's exactly right. Yeah. So we'll see. You know, Paul is a very a resourceful guy, and I think that he's going to do some amazing things. You know, for years he's been talking about having some very simple device that he can type on that forces him to focus on the writing without getting distracted by anything else. And he ended up buying an Apple Newton eMate 300, which is one of those old clamshell Newtons that, you know, obviously can't connect to the internet at this point. So it's basically just a digital typewriter. And I think that disconnecting completely from the internet is definitely going to help him accomplish that goal even more.
Wow.
How does he get his stuff off of there when he's done?
I don't know if
he sends a pigeon or something.
Yeah, he may not have worked that out yet, unfortunately.
He has to hand the Newton over to someone at The Verge who then transcribes it. Yeah.
Okay, I'm recording. I have this 500-page article. Right. I can't get off my Newton.